Have you ever stopped to think about how your brain seamlessly stitches together the visual world, when stuff comes into both eyes at
Yeah,
once?
it's pretty incredible, right? Most of us don't even notice it happening.
Exactly. But what happens when those, like the critical connections inside the brain, what if they're missing or severed?
Well, that's precisely what we're taking a deep dive into today. We're looking at this really fascinating 1999 study.
Okay.
It's called Bilateral Field Advantage and Evoked Potential Interhemispheric Transmission in Commiserotomy and Cholelogenesis. Quite a mouthful.
Haha, yeah, sounds like it. So, what's the mission here?
Basically, we want to unpack how visual info gets integrated between the brain's two halves. We'll explore the specific jobs of the corpus callosum, that's the big one, and the smaller anterior commissure.
And see how the brain maybe finds some workarounds.
Exactly. Unexpected workarounds are the really cool part.
All right, so to really get this, we probably need to talk about those information highways first. What are the main pathways connecting the hemispheres?
Good starting point. So you've got two main bridges, the corpus callosum, the CC. It's like this massive bundle of nerve fibers.
Okay, the big one.
Yeah. And then there's the smaller anterior commissure, the AC. Still important, though.
Right. And this study looked at specific groups of people.
They compared normal individuals with three really unique groups. First, commiserotomy patients.
Like the patient LB mentioned in the study.
Exactly like LB. These are people who had their major brain connections, including the CC, surgically cut, usually for severe epilepsy.
Wow. Okay, and the second group.
Individuals born with complete cholelogenesis, or ACC. So they were born without a corpus callosum.
Born without it, but the AC was okay.
Usually, yes. Typically an intact anterior commissure. And then the third group, partial cholelogenesis.
Meaning some of it was there.
Yeah, they had just a small front part of their CC left, like the genus plus their AC was intact as well.
Okay, so different conditions affecting these pathways. How did the scientists actually, track the signals moving across?
They use something called evoked potentials, EPs. It's a way to measure the brain's electrical buzz in response to something specific, like a visual flash. So in typical brains, you flash something on one side, and pretty quickly, these brainwave patterns called P1 and N1, they pop up in both hemispheres.
Both sides. How?
That's the CC doing its job, rapidly transmitting the signal across. There's a tiny delay, of course.
The interhemispheric transmission time?
Precisely. How long it takes that signal to jump the gap.
Gotcha. Now, you mentioned a twist earlier about those early signals in the patient groups. This is where it gets really interesting, right?
It's because that early, fast P1 and N1 activity that crossed hemispheres in normals, it was just absent, gone.
In which groups?
In both the commiserotomy patient, LB, and in all the ACC patients, the ones born without a CC.
Okay, so that really points to the back part of the corpus callosum being crucial for that first quick sensory signal transfer.
It strongly suggests that, yes, seems absolutely necessary for that rapid relay of early visual stuff.
But didn't you say the ACC patients did show something later on, even without that early signal?
Exactly. This is the fascinating part. Unlike patient LB, the ACC patients did show a different, later positive wave in the hemisphere that wasn't directly stimulated.
So what does that tell us about the interior commissure, the AC, which they did have?
Well, it hints that the AC might be stepping in, mediating some kind of later electrical response. It's not the initial fast sensory transfer, but maybe a slower alternative route is kicking in.
A sort of backup system. Okay, that makes sense electrically. But what about behavior? How do they actually perform on tasks? Let's start with patient LB, the one with the severed connections.
Right, so for LB, trying to compare letters shown to both visual fields at the same time, it was nearly impossible. He was basically guessing.
At chance level, like you said, a bilateral disadvantage.
Yep, clear evidence he couldn't integrate the information between his separated hemispheres. But there's this weird bias, too.
A bias.
Yeah, if they showed him two letters in the same spot on each side, like top left and top right, he had this really strong tendency to say they matched.
Even when they didn't.
Even when they didn't. He felt like he was right, subjectively. It suggests this kind of perceptual fill-in where each hemisphere just sort of assumes the other side sees the same thing.
That's wild. Did the ACC patients, the ones born without the CC, show that same bias?
No. Interestingly, they didn't show that specific matching bias. Their situation was different.
So how did they do on comparing things across hemispheres? Did that intact AC help them adapt?
It really seems like it did, especially for simple things, when it came to just matching simple letters bilaterally. Both the complete and partial ACC patients performed well above chance. sometimes even better than the normal control group.
Wow. So the AC really can provide a compensatory pathway, a plan B, like you said.
For simple visual information, it definitely looks that way. It's quite remarkable adaptation.
But I'm guessing there's a catch. What about when things got more complicated? Did plan B hold up?
Ah, good question. No, it didn't, really. When the task involved matching more complex visual patterns, things got tricky.
How so?
The complete ACC patients, the ones with no CC at all, they showed significant difficulty again. Those bilateral disadvantages came back.
Okay, so the AC is good for simple stuff, but complex patterns need the power of the CC.
That's what it strongly suggests. The corpus callosum seems vital for efficiently integrating that more complex, detailed visual data.
And what about the partial agenesis group, the ones with just a little bit of the CC left?
Even more revealing, those patients, the ones with just that small anterior piece of the CC, the genu, they perform much closer to normal, even on the complex patterns.
So even a small piece of the original highway makes a big difference for complex tasks.
A substantial difference, yeah. Mm. It really highlights how important even those residual callosal fibers are for higher level visual interaction between the hemispheres.
Okay, so let's try and sum this up. This deep dive really paints a picture of distinct roles, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The posterior CC, critical for that fast, direct transfer of initial sensory signals, especially when the task is complex.
But the brain's adaptability is pretty amazing, too.
Totally. The anterior commissure can step up and provide this valuable alternative pathway, even if it's slower and maybe less efficient for simpler info when the CC isn't there.
Which leads to a pretty profound final thought, I think.
Yeah.
Well, if the brain has this incredible capacity for finding workarounds when major pathways are missing, what does that really tell us about, you know, the hidden potential, the neural plasticity that lets us adapt?
That's the big question, isn't it? How much untapped adaptability is there? Does it just help us cope with challenges, or could it perhaps even enhance our abilities in ways we don't expect? Something to definitely think about.